Hey everyone. Today I'm super excited to have Corey Clipson, CEO of Spawn Bitcoin, on with us today on the Crypto Rabbit Hole. Hey Corey, how you doing? Thanks for coming on.
Hey Alex, thanks for having me.
So before we get started, I thought you'd be glad to know that, you know, over here in this family, we only stack with Spawn. So.
Oh, I'd love to hear that. That's awesome. Good for you.
So just to open up, why don't you like take us through your background? So how'd you discover Bitcoin and what led you to where you are today with Swan?
Sure. Yeah. I used to work for really big companies like Morgan Stanley, McKinsey, Google, stuff like that. And got into startups after leaving Google back in 2013. So about 8.5 years in startup land, investing, advising, kind of just mixing it up in Silicon Valley land, New York, LA. And Bitcoin kind of smacked me upside the head in the last bull run. So spring of 2017. And like a lot of people, especially if you're coming from sort of the startup tech side of things, I got pulled into the, you know, crypto land for almost a year, kind of exploring and looking at white papers and investing in altcoins and trading on Binance and all that kind of stuff. And starting kind of right toward the end of 2017, I started to get like a bit more of a signal about what the innovation of Bitcoin actually was about and just how much, how important it is as a new money and a new monetary system and what that could mean for humanity and the globe. And for me, it just felt like the most important problem to work on. And it seemed like the thing that I could get behind the most and what I wanted to focus on. And so I guess by about April, I had made the decision. So this is like April of 2018 that I wanted to focus on Bitcoin exclusively. It took me about 6 months to wrap up being I was president and chief investment officer of a crypto fund at the time. So I had to extricate myself from that and kind of retool myself and my knowledge and my networking and try to figure out how to add value in Bitcoin. I'd say by spring of 2019, around April, I kind of knew that the angle for me would be something at the intersection of educating about Bitcoin and selling Bitcoin. Tried a gifting product first, launched that in the fall. That was Give Bitcoin. And it was really apparent that there was actually room in the market to just be a pure Bitcoin seller. And that was not apparent to me initially because I thought the crypto exchanges pretty much had that covered. But because they have the incentive to try to get people to trade instead of just use Bitcoin as a savings technology and kind of get people to do a, you know, one-way stacking, always make your number go up, always be stacking more sats and don't sell them and don't trade them. You know, there was room in the market for that, and that the community of Bitcoin fans around the world would be really supportive, and that that would make your marketing dollars go a lot further because there's so many people ready to amplify that message, right? Like you and I never met, but you heard about Swan from somebody at some point, probably. And we don't pay for marketing, so we don't actually spend on advertising, I should say. So it's pretty powerful. Team's grown a lot. We're obviously really focused on providing a really easy on-ramp that you can trust, safe, fast, and easy, getting people started buying Bitcoin. We've got the Bitcoin savings plans, which is like automatic stacking every day, week, or month. And then we've got this this whole new division that's exploded this year called Swan Private Client Services, which is servicing like high net worth individuals and, you know, family offices and, you know, entity accounts, companies, whatever, around the globe. So that business is actually global. And so that's been pretty cool. About 40 people now. Technically, headquarters is in the LA area, but the team is literally all over the world. And we run everything on Zoom just like this and Slack. And that's about it.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I love your platform. I use it. My dad uses it. Highly recommend it.
Awesome.
Yeah. So the crypto rabbit hole, I'm focused on, you know, promoting youth financial literacy, both just with money in general and with crypto. So why do you think that younger people aren't learning more about money and, you know, exciting new developments like this in school?
Yeah. I mean, I think, was probably never well understood at sort of the grade school, high school level, you know, call it into the early 1900s. And then ever since then, it's actually been in the interest of, you know, basically people pushing the fiat system to obfuscate the reality of money, because it's actually, you know, government and academia have a financial incentive to keep people confused about the nature of money and to promote what is essentially inferior money in this money that's backed by nothing. So this is what's driven sound money bugs, Austrian economists, gold bugs crazy for 100 years. But the fact was gold wasn't good enough as a monetary technology to win that battle because it was too easy to centralize, too easy to confiscate, too hard to subdivide, and too hard to assay, all kind of too hard to send, basically. But now we have a better gold. We have a better gold that actually functions as a currency in Bitcoin. And now all the sound money fans and the Austrian economists are able to come out and celebrate that we actually have real money for the first time as humans.
Yeah, I mean, sadly, I think you're right, like to your first point, that I feel like they really do an injustice to us by not teaching us at all about money and, you know, leaving it to ourselves basically for when we grow up. So, you know, getting into Bitcoin, do you see Bitcoin as, you seem pretty confident in it, but do you see Bitcoin as the best money? And if so, why?
Yeah, I think Bitcoin is clearly, for people that actually understand it and actually understand money, it's the best money that we've ever had as humans. I think it's, you know, it's a once in every few centuries type of innovation along the order of, like, you know, the internet or agriculture, the printing press, soap, the Industrial Revolution. It's one of those types of innovations. It's a 0-1 moment of the discovery of perfect money. And, you know, it's a one-time thing. It can't be usurped. It can't be bested. This is e-cash. This is money. This is what I think humans will be using, you know, thousands of years from now.
So, you know, a lot of people see it differently. I think from what I've seen, a lot of people see Bitcoin as more of a store of value rather than, you know, actual cash that they can use. So in the future, you do see it becoming like a default way to pay for things?
Yeah, so that's actually just a narrative that's kind of promoted by altcoins and altcoin VCs sometimes, the ones that are kind of dishonest or just stupid and don't actually understand what's going on. It makes absolutely no sense to spend money that you expect to appreciate in purchasing power. So that's just what you're seeing. You know, the monetization of an asset follows a, you know, essentially an adoption curve that starts with store value, then moves into medium of exchange, and eventually is unit of account, meaning that you price goods and services in that asset. You know, there are very, very few people today that want to be spending Bitcoin. It's basically only people that have been in for like 8 to 10 years, and Bitcoin is 99.9% of their net worth. And it's a failure of logic to think that merchant adoption is what drives spending of an asset. It's not. It's consumer adoption. It's consumer demand for wanting to spend an asset that makes merchants actually adopt it and makes it like you can pay Bitcoin here. So that's all you're seeing. You're just seeing that, you know, naturally, as the years progress, you know, and as 10 times more people in 2025 will want to spend Bitcoin than, you know, people that want to spend Bitcoin in 2020, more and more people will demand to be able to pay for things in Bitcoin. The Lightning Network will continue to expand. You'll see Visa and MasterCard and all the payments companies adopt Bitcoin, integrate it, see what's going on with Square and Cash App. You see what's going on with like 100 different, you know, crypto wallets or whatever. You know, this stuff is just in its infancy. The only people that want to spend Bitcoin today are like real enthusiasts or OGs that don't have anything else to spend. But there will be more and more enthusiasts over time, and there will be more and more people that have most of their net worth in Bitcoin and will demand to actually spend Bitcoin. So you're just getting this, the altcoins today are just getting out over their skis and basically trotting out the same kind of narratives that, you know, Bitcoin suffered from in 2013, 14, 15, that ended up with like the Bcash split and all that stuff. Like, we've seen this movie before, and these people are just mistaken.
Okay, so I wasn't planning on asking about this, but now you have me curious. So, like, you're talking about other, you know, inferior altcoins. Where does Ethereum fit into that?
I mean, Ethereum is broken and needs to be redone. And the plans for the design for ETH 2.0 are even more centralizing and more unfair than the first version of Ethereum. And, you know, if you talk to like you know, very experienced, you know, database engineers that understand distributed databases or network architecture or whatever. You talk to somebody at Amazon, Google, whatever, that understands these things like deeply, they'll look at it and they just, you know, it's laughable to try to pack that much functionality into layer one of distributed network or distributed protocol like that. It just doesn't work. You need something that's like very simple at the base layer that can ossify and stay stable so that you can build on top of it. So it's very centrally controlled. It doesn't have sort of the moral authority because of the pre-mine and because of all the shady stuff that Vitalik and Joe Lubin and all these guys have done over the years. You know, you got a hard forking every 2 months or whatever, like hacks everywhere. I think it's just, it's going to take a while to play out, but essentially the market for smart contracts, whether it's valuable or not, if it is valuable, it's a race to the bottom. You're always going to have people chipping away at it because a lot of people can do the same thing. It's basically a commodity. So the price goes to zero, whether it's Solana or Binance Smart Chain or anybody else that comes in next year. That whole layer one smart contracts thing will always be looking for like cheaper, faster, and more centralized to be able to accomplish the function. So it's just impossible for these commodities, you know, the digital oil or whatever, to also be sound money. Logically, it's impossible.
So I think it's safe to say you don't really see any competitors to Bitcoin in the near future.
I don't see any competitors to Bitcoin ever.
Okay. So anyway, on social media, you guys are very vocal around the idea that Bitcoin solves a lot of problems that governments have been having recently with irresponsible money policies, meaning like the way they spend money, irresponsibly printing it. So can you just elaborate on that?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, if you have the power of the printing press with a fiat currency, and it's just too tempting. I don't think even, you don't need to make the assumption that people are evil. It's just, if it's there and you can stay in power by printing money and giving it to people to win votes or just kind of like consolidate your power, right, or whatever, you're just going to do that. And that's essentially just borrowing from the future and bringing that consumption forward and sticking the future generations with the bill. And, you know, Bitcoin just existing, it doesn't even have to get rid of these fiat currencies, but it provides a check on that tyranny of the money printer and the Cantillon effect, which is, you know, the basically how people who are closer to the government printing spigot get the money first at the lowest interest rate, and they benefit from being able to spend the money before the effects of that money printing actually inflate the prices. So they get to spend while things are still cheap, then it gets down different rungs. And by the time it hits like Main Street, they're already paying higher prices and they're paying higher interest, yeah, to be able to get credit or whatever. So the whole system is the best we've got. It's better than what we had before. It was a better match for post-industrial revolution, information technology, global age, but it's not good enough. And now we have something much, much better.
Okay. So a lot of people out here who are doubting Bitcoin or just aren't very knowledgeable about it, a lot of them don't really understand it. So What do you say to those people when you're trying to convince them? And also, I'm curious, like, what would you say is your success rate in kind of converting people over to your side of supporting Bitcoin?
So, I mean, it can take people hundreds of hours to thousands of hours to have like pretty good understanding of Bitcoin. So I think what you usually try to do is just spark an interest and get them to start doing some self-study. So I always talk about like, how do you get somebody started down the rabbit hole? How do you get them wanting to, you know, go deep on a podcast or pick up a good book on Bitcoin and kind of, you know, continue down that path? And we supply a lot of those materials. And obviously we give away a ton of free education. We give away, you know, Jan Pritzker's book and Gigi's book and Tomer Strohleit's book, and, you know, try to help people on this path and also give people who are kind of into Bitcoin something that they can give to somebody else, right? And, you know, so you can go to like swanbitcoin.com/free book, give away Inventing Bitcoin, which is my favorite book on Bitcoin. So being able to provide that service is pretty cool. You know, as far as like what Bitcoin is, I mean, I think what you just got to understand is like, Bitcoin, as you noted, is the best tool that we've ever had for storing value. And that market is just so absolutely massive. you know, conservatively, it's about $400 trillion that are sort of assets that are being used to store value. More aggressively, it could be like $500 or $600 trillion. If you, you know, obviously do the math on that, that's like $20 million or more per coin, for which Bitcoin is the best tool for the job. So when I think about, you know, the next few years, the next few decades, my grandkids, grandkids, whatever, I'm thinking about, you know, the adoption curve of Bitcoin and what I think the price chart will look like in the future. I'm trying to build a mental model that helps me think about, you know, at what stage will other people around the world come to understand the truth about Bitcoin and actually go big into it. So, you know, one of the funny things about, you know, VCs and companies that are trying to raise money right now and trying to pretend that there's like this gold rush and like don't miss the boat is they try to pretend that crypto and Bitcoin is like further along than it actually is. And so you'll hear things like, oh, there's like, you know, 60 million people in the US that own Bitcoin, and 300 million people, you know, own some Bitcoin or whatever it is. And, you know, my estimate of the number of people that actually own a good chunk of their net worth in Bitcoin and have a really solid, firm grasp of what Bitcoin actually is in the United States, probably about 100,000 people. Yeah. Because I'll go to like a crypto blockchain conference and there'll be like 500 people there, and there'll be maybe three or four people that actually understand Bitcoin. Right. And I can tell by the questions, you know, on crypto podcasts when I come and do this, and you tell me about all the people you talk to, and they don't understand what Bitcoin is. So it's just early, and that's okay. You know, people got to get wrecked. There's a lot of Bitcoiners that came out of getting wrecked by altcoins in 2017, 2018. There's a lot of people that skipped that step this time more than ever. Obviously skipped that step and came straight to Bitcoin and understand Bitcoin pretty deeply from coming in the bear market at 18, 19, 20, 21, as we've written it up. And they just kind of skipped the painful tuition that you have to pay getting wrecked trying to trade crypto, and just went straight into Bitcoin and understand that, you know, this is the best savings technology we've ever had. And all you have to do is be productive and earn value through the sale of your products or services. However, the value that you make can just, you know, some or all of that can just go into Bitcoin and be there forever.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, I think I would agree with that actually. Yeah. It's very new. So it's hard to have a huge population who can call themselves experts on it, especially when it's such a deep topic. But going back to your mentality and helping other people understand it. Since I've had money in it, I've just been following the price all the time. And I think we can all agree that it's somewhat volatile. So how should newer investors like myself approach Bitcoin with the volatility in mind? Like, especially with the downtrend we've seen this week, well, I don't think it's that significant. How should people be thinking about it?
Yeah, I mean, where you want to get to is that your number of sats, your amount of Bitcoin only ever goes up. So I always give people the advice, only buy Bitcoin that you'll never sell. Mm. So that's how I think about it. I think Bitcoin is a savings technology. You should put your excess capital into it. And you shouldn't be thinking about trying to time the market. It doesn't really matter when you come in, just buy it, leave it in there. You'll be really happy. Zoom out, think about, by the time you think about holding for 5 years, which you should, like anything, you shouldn't touch it for 5 years. Just like I advised, Scott Harrison from Charity Water, when he was setting up like a Bitcoin endowment, I was like, you got to like not touch this for 5 years, and then all the Bitcoiners will give you money because they know that you'll never want to sell it. If you get to 5 years, you're going to get to 10, and then you're going to start thinking about giving it to your grandkids,
I mean, yeah, I think the same way. Whenever I talk to my friends and they might make fun of me because, you know, it's down 10K in the past 2 weeks, I'll tell them, like, I don't really care what it's going to be in 6 months, you know, like call me in 10 years, you know?
There you go. Yeah. But, Bitcoin makes savings cool again.
Right. So, you know, we're running a little short on time. So I just wanted to ask you, like, what advice might you have for kids my age when talking about investing, crypto, Bitcoin, you know, just anything in the space? What advice do you have?
Yeah, honestly, it's really taking the time. You earn the ability to hold Bitcoin through the volatility by learning about it and understanding what you own. So they go hand in hand. There's a positive feedback loop between like learning more about Bitcoin gives you the confidence and the conviction to buy more Bitcoin, which then makes you want to learn more about it, and you gain more conviction. So that's kind of that's the virtuous feedback loop of Bitcoin, and that's why I think buying Bitcoin and educating yourself about Bitcoin is kind of the really important nexus of activity.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the best way to learn is through experience. So, I mean, that's how I'm approaching it personally. So
reading and listening to people that have been through it is good too.
Well, yeah, obviously, which is why we're here today.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a new daily newsletter we started about a month ago called The Daily Bitcoiner. So it's just corey.substack.com, corey.substack.com. And it's basically every single day, it's one of the best pieces of educational content from the last 12 years of Bitcoin.
Awesome.
People are loving it. It's awesome. So we really went through and we got the top podcasts, video episodes, articles, blog posts, whatever. And there's just one of the best things each day. It's great.
Yeah. Awesome. I encourage everyone to look into that. I mean, that was my next question. If people wanted to learn more about you, learn more about you.
Start there. Follow me on Twitter, Corey Clipston, swan.com. Come sign up for an account or sign up for our newsletter. No matter where you end up, like if you're getting into the space, even if you think you're going to end up trading crypto 24/7 or whatever, like you want to start with Bitcoin because that's the thing that started it all. And it's the thing that's going to be here in the end. So, I think there's plenty of people that, will have different degrees of success or failure trading altcoins. But, if you have profits, you're going to want to keep them in Bitcoin. And if you get wrecked, you're probably going to want to go back to work and mine some fiat and put it into Bitcoin. So, you'll be here. You'll be a Bitcoiner in the future one way or another. Might as well start early.
I hope you're right. So I think we're short on time. So just wanted to say, as always, make sure to subscribe to the Crypto Rabbit Hole. Follow me on Twitter at @AP_rabbithole. And you can always find us at cryptorabbithole.net. Thanks for watching.